you.
Woof, thank you so much, Lilt, Keith Carr, Tina Eck, for conjuring. As we say, metaphor and music are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, and we have both tonight. Ah, very good. So, welcome, denizens of Washington. It's very good of everybody to be here. As many of you know, District of Columbia is an anagram using every letter only once. For I toil bad cosmic turf, right? So we're undercover agents here, but we're throwing that into the cauldron and ladling out because this city has more intentional zodiacs than any city in the world. It was built on Plato's map of Atlantis. There are deep embedded intentions that we want to bring alive. There we go. Because as we wake up every morning, we can join with Dorothy Parker going, "What fresh hell is this?" But I love the head of the ACLU said, "No, this is the golden age of citizen activism." And we go, "Yes, it is, the much woofy rising." So we are here to be citizen tricksters. We like that. What does citizen trickster mean? It's our capacity to dedicate this night and this winter and forevermore to be agents of disrupting polarity and turning it into a spiral. There we go. As ally learned druid John Michael Greer says, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, and you will only get hot conflict in an already too hot world. So what two needs is three, which is magnetizing the all-unifying story. So I think it's useful to begin with the very ancient traditional chant, which is, "Ugh precedes ah." So just feel free or not, you know, to go, just to outgas the year. We're ready to compost the cruelty of the year and liberate the beauty. So we might just go, that's good. All right. That's quite enough. No. And that precedes, alhamdulillah. So, you know, many of you have been traveling with me for a long time, and some of you are new, going, what? what is this? But so if we get to familiar sourdough starter, you can chant along. Muti comes from the Sangomas of South Africa, and muti means power and healing. True power is that which heals. We don't source power, we invite it, as our ancestors have done for 20,000 years at this winter solstice time. So I have muti customized with coyote hair from my late great ancestor, Stella Coyote, with whom I lived for 19 years, and she taught me many tricks. So this is some of her coyote fur. She passes it on, mixed with tobacco from Syria when it was beautiful and other magic things. And so we say, oh, spirit of the compassionate and liberating trickster, you know, who set the whole thing going, all of creation, the whole shebang with a sizzle of liberating lightning that moves through all the plants and animals, and every now and then it gets orthodoxed or imprisoned or bamboozled or hoodwinked or conned, so it becomes a great escape artist. As Lewis Hyde said, coyote is lucky if enough con men show up to school him or her. We are so lucky. We are so lucky. You know, and then it sizzles into each one of our hearts now. And we say, inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. You know, may it be so. There we go. Again, we're throwing everything into the cauldron and reinventing things. It does nothing any harm to be tossed into the cauldron. You know, and so it's like we have the power fist. That was good. But then we want to turn it into the palm of blessing. Right? Mars into Venus. Because our evolutionary conundrum is the Dementors of Doom, bless their hearts in some future cosmology. The Dementors of Doom, you know, Trump is just a sort of a cipher, the whole thing's kind of fallen apart. Many have said that, you know, the Bannons and so on, they are trained chaos magicians, knowing full well about the power of manipulation of metaphor and image and story. And they feed a complete contempt for truth, feeding on heat and discord and war and polarity. So they do things that make us angry, of course, but the anger feeds them. So we want to be aroused, you know, anger into desire for the magnetizing story. And part of our adventure is that our language, our metaphor, our story be in accord with our dedicated hearts. You know, and we throw bespelling ourselves into the cauldron. You know, when people say, I'm sick and tired of this, it's like, oh, no, don't do that. How about we throw sick and tired as a metaphor into the cauldron and ladle out, aroused. You know, I'm very aroused by this thing. Because as we go along, just feel what is, you know, imprisoning and feel what is liberating as a word or a thought or a language. So it's useful also to start with a calming mudra. Everything before us is available for fresh animation. You know, the Neptune dreams and vision in Pisces, its home realm, is as though all the critters on this planet convene backstage and go, what are we going to do about the humans? We've got to either kill them or heal them. Let's do both. Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship available for fresh animated expression. So a million years ago, we're rummaging through everything we've ever studied and all the schools and maybe past lives if we're into such a thing. But everything we know, we want to dust it off because this is the time of dire beauty. So a million years ago when I was taking an Eureka 40-day enlightenment training or something, but the kingdom, we liked sucking the G out of kingdom, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and there are mudras, just this mudra, it's kind of like the Pharaonic mudra, but you know, hands not clenched, but loosely. And this is a mudra that you're invited to adopt if you want, but it banishes all fear. Just experiment and see about that. So we make this mudra, and it gives a calm, sober banishing of fear, calm and kind, as though we'd all taken psilocybe mushrooms. There we go. So put that in your magic backpack and pull it out whenever one wants, kind of calm. And as Paul Stamets, great ally mycologist, and also Johns Hopkins says, you know, psilocybe mushrooms calm down the amygdala, the manipulated by fear portion of our brain that's scanning, that is ancient and wants to be calmed down, and it increases cooperation in the other regions of the brain, increases confidence and kindness. And as Stamets says, those are leadership qualities. And what people have done for 20,000 years at the solstice, the Saturnalia, we want to insource, you know, all that the planets represent. The planets represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us, you know, and connect us to the world as they stream out there. So Saturn is authority, leadership. And it gets a bad rap because when we outsource our authority to incompetent sociopaths, you know, then we should be afraid, but to inhale back in our Saturn. So for 20,000 years, people would gather now to have the conversing of what is wise governance. What is wise governance that is dedicated to the well-being of the whole pack? Because think of where we are. No animals on this planet would outsource leadership to someone who did not care about the pack's well-being. Only humans, and not for long, may it be so. There we go. My friend Gioia Timpanelli, great storyteller from Sicily, says, there's five ways of traveling: walking, crawling, swimming, flying, and how we travel now. Woohoo! Woohoo! Because there are so many stories going on. We're not limited to just the human. We're stepping out of just the human narrative. We will be weaving some of that, of course, to tease in larger mystery to animate it. But we are eager this time, as people have done, you know, for a long time, to step out of our outworn incarnational garbs, you know, to lay to rest, you know, all of our Saturn issues. By the time you walk out of here, you'll have no more issues with your father. Because in the realm of Ho'oponopono, redeem the world by redeeming that within, we go, well, what does it mean that we have such incompetent, horrific, possessed by demons, you know, people in exactly the wrong positions of control over life, this war on life? And on one level, it says, well, for all of us to inhale our Saturn, our authority. Read really useful article on, you know, humans have gathered in many different forms throughout time, and it was an article on egalitarian foraging. And the author said this is one of the main ways humans have also been, which would, the values of egalitarian foraging are altruism, team play, and they would have a mechanism built in lest any tyrant assume control because the power was distributed in each heart. Right, and that's the model, you know, for the trickster redeemer to be born in each heart, for wise governance to be born in each heart. So if we, each of us, spiraling out there into the world and encouraging others to inhale our Saturn, then we can dissolve the power of, you know, the Trumpelstiltskin. And I overheard, I can't attribute because it just was passing through, but I loved this too, with language play. Someone said, you know, no, it's the Trump regime that is the resistance. We are the dynamic force. And I go, oh, that's so good. Because resistance means to, you know, push against, right? You're in a polarity thing, and it's the losing move in Aikido. The person who resists loses. The aggressor always loses, but the resistance too. And I go, right, they're the resistance. We're flowing right around that. That's part of that dynamic. Tonight, many stories. But especially at this time, the uber narrative is not the befoibled human one, but nature's, and to avail ourselves of backstage mystery. So many of you know this, but I think, you know, what we say now is likes being repeated, you know. So do many people here know the Christmas as an Amanita Mushroom Festival story? Yes. Sorry, well, here it is again. So, because it's so charming, and it's such a, you know, as we drive around and see the sort of toxicity of busyness, but all the colored lights and the kind of DMT mimic of advertising, just remember, people are just trying to get high. And underneath that, because part of our skill set is to look at everything sketchy, you know, and say, what did this want to be before it got trapped, before it got bamboozled, before it got snookered and conned, you know, and how do we track it back to its originating impulse, you know, and offer it liberation. So the Christmas as an Amanita Mushroom Festival is true. And I first heard it from my late ancestor. It'll come back to me in a moment. But in the north, the Sami, the shaman dresses as the sacrament, red and white Amanita mushrooms. And they grow under fir trees, like little red and white packages. And the reindeer love to eat them. And then humans will drink the shaman or the reindeer's piss because it filters out some of the alkaloid or toxic alkaloids. And the experience of Amanita is flying, right? So the reindeer and the humans fly, and they go to the North Pole to gather wisdom. And because the snow is high outside doors, they come down everyone's smoke chimney to deliver wisdom into each person's heart. We go, and so it is. And it's also, you know, Santa's wink, you know, reminds us that he is Odin, as old as the forests, And one eye is winking, and one eye is open to remind us that this season, one eye looks in, one eye looks out. And this is very resonant in the astro-mytho chart of now. We have Jupiter, principle of stories and abundance and travel and journey and learning in its own sign of Sagittarius for the first time in 12 years. And it's at a 90-degree angle to Neptune, dreams and vision in Pisces, which is the inward journeying Jupiter, the inward voyage, and they want to be in cahoots. So, you know, in this time, we remember outward and inward. It's tidal. You know, and we can tell when we've overstayed somewhere because we'll get grumpy. We go, oh, it was time to go home a half hour ago. So there's that. And so part of what we get to do, you know, in our gathering here is to throw things into the cauldron as we go. We'll have a finale where we really get to throw lots of things in. But the fending off of wonder into the cauldron. And how we can think of that personally and collectively, I was with a friend in Ireland, and a more conservative friend, and I wanted to sort of sneak off after supper to this standing stone, but friend said, I'll come with you. I'm like, okay. And it was one of those things that, you know, the moon was rising as it is behind everybody right now, and it was like, whoa. And as we crossed the field, it was one of those things where as we got close to this, you know, deserted standing stone, you could absolutely feel it, like, wong, 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 you know, just irrefutable. And my friend, the closer we got, started talking faster and faster. Like, remember when, remember this, and remember that, wong, 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 until we finally got there, and it was like, poof. So how many ways do we fend off wonder, heeding the call? We want to heed the call to dree our weird, to play our role in destiny. It's the Celtic phrase for that. And where do we talk over it? Or, you know, and you know, with Mercury, we say, communicate more, talk less, maybe. We play with all these things. But if we throw fending of wonder into the cauldron, blah, 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 we label out embracing mystery, wonder, uncertainty. Because the pattern now says, you know, the modern world's addiction to certainty, it's so crazy that's being disrupted anyway. But it's kind of like a game of musical chairs. Music stops, everybody scrambles for an identity or a job or whatever. But here, everybody, we go, we never wanted to play musical chairs. We're going off into mystery. And in ancient world, not knowing was considered a fantastic accomplishment. Look, these humans, probably everybody here, everybody listening, they've run out of certainty. Now mystery can find them. So it is that kind of, and that's when the one eye looks inward, and it's like available, available. And that's what trickster, again, trickster represents nature's evolutionary, you know, resilient, against all odds, intelligence, experimental intelligence. And trickster within us and without says, and if we don't know what to do, invite in what does. And these are things to play with and practice. I know this over and over again in situations where I was like, oh, no, oh, tyranny. It's like, invite in trickster, to disrupt, to disrupt. I'm boundaried about adding too much into the astrological language because there's 800 million asteroids and whatnot. But I'm fond of, increasingly, Eris, goddess of discord and disruption, way out in the Kuiper Belt beyond Pluto, has a 500-year orbit, doesn't move very fast, which means when each person here was born, Eris was in Aries, and she's very close to Uranus right now, and Saturn is squaring it. So it says to everybody, you know, where would disruption be part of your beautiful palette with which to paint reality? What would we like disrupted? You know, and everybody has an invisible magic backpack under their seat they can take home. And in that is liberating lightning, to be able to throw this at any imprisoning thing and disrupt, you know, where, what would we like disrupted? Anything up to no good, the polluting industries, the whatever. So, you know, I'd crafted, you know, just a long time ago, you know, strategic cultural advantage goes to those cultivating intimacy with the power of symbols and dreams. And I was with buddy James Hillman, and he said, who said that? And I go, I said that. And he's like, oh, jolly good. And then we talked about, you know, restoring mythological literacy. And he's like, I like that. I like that. And he was a great disruptor in many ways. He goes, everybody wants to get in touch with their feeling. I want to get in touch with my thinking. It's like, oh, you cute James. We want everything. So part of what is, some things are always true, but there are times when they are truer. We say the protoplasm of reality is especially receptive to imaginative imprint now. So we want to critique what we don't want, and then, but what do we want? What is our desire? So we're gathering our wits to compost dread. You know, and you know, when I'm conjuring this event, you know, or anything beforehand, I really do have to live it. So it's like last night going, dread, loneliness. Oh, right, okay, throw that into the cauldron. There we go. We're here to compost dread and ladle out calm, triumphant dedication to democracy. Ah. And that's what groups are good for. You know, it's true that we can be lonely on our own, but it takes a group in which to be alienated. But this is a very good group, a good pack, right? And so there is, you know, a gathering of encouragement, especially at this dark, this longest night. We gather to hum our unique contribution. Because we might say, you know, many people have different kind of patterns and diagrams to explain this, that what is the human journey and, you know, of our species and how did we get here? And so some say, well, we start off with embedded animistic kinship in which the sense of self is a little circle that's very permeable, like complete participation, you know, in animism and not a strong boundaried sense of self distinct from the whole big thing. And then we journey forward in time and we get, you know, pyramids and incredible knowledge and everything, but a priesthood, right? And we begin to get humans as the speciesism, as more important than everybody. You know, the Greeks 4,000 years ago threw out all their animal gods and replaced them with human gods. And we go, we might want to revisit that right now. And then we get to, you know, church and state, doom. And Rick Tarnas says the Michelangelo moment of, you know, God and the human. He says that's the download. That's the download of species exceptionalism right there. And then we get to modern psychology, you know, and the unsupervised Mars team that says we don't need these myths and fairy tales and symbolic languages like astrology. We want just science, right? And cultures always symbolically embedded their science in their myths and fairy tales to be handed down. The Inanna myth is the Venus orbital cycle and many other things. That's a whole larger talk, but you know, experiment with that. And so what happened, and which we want to revisit, is we want just knowledge. So it stripped knowledge from its mythological moral cocoon that it always be used with dedication to collective well-being. But we say truth is an escapade artist, and we're here to encourage it. Because remember, this quality that is eager to bound on stage, you know, trickster likes against all odds. Again, it comes alive when things are difficult, and it's jaunty. It finishes things off with a laugh. It's like the power of Scheherazade in La Ila Wa Lila, the 1001 Nights. Due to her power of storytelling, she saves women, saves everybody, really liberates the land and liberates even the tyrant who has hardened their heart. So we don't count on that, but the trickster within all of us is interested in liberating the entire circumstance, exactly, the entire circumstance. So we go, truth is an escapade artist. And so there's many kinds of newses. As many of you know, I am deeply dedicated to the sacred teachings of the Bunny Planet. And these wonderful, wonderful magic children's books by Rosemary Wells. They're just so darling. And it's always a little animal who's had a difficult day, you know, and dad didn't say goodnight and they got sick at school. And just as they're going to sleep, this liminal time, just as we're meeting as the moon is rising and the sun is setting at twilight, you know, these liminal places between sleeping and waking, between day and night. In fairy tales, that's where magic happens. And so just as the little animal is going off to sleep, time to go to the Bunny Planet, far beyond the Earth and stars, 20 light years south of Mars, spins the gentle Bunny Planet, and the Bunny Queen is Janet. Come in, she says, for here's the day that should have been. And they redo the whole day beautifully in rhyme in this wonderful way. So we go, so here's the news that should have been. Here's the thing, you know, that quality. There's a number of things, you know, that categories I kind of create too, which is prison masquerading as freedom, right? And that's why we cultivate our inner trickster intuition, our discerning. You know, and in this language, intuition means something quite specific. It's a journey of putting actual research and knowledge on the table and then the rapid perception of potential. I know what this could be, this person, this project. But it requires the research, the actual facts. So, you know, every now and then I hear people say, I have no common sense, I must be intuitive. It's like, no. But intuition, what can we trust? What can we trust? And or we often think, who can we trust? And if we reframe that into what can we trust, we have great trickster answers. We can really trust our intuition. And one way it described is that anxiety is a meter or gauge that will go up when we go away from our inner guide, our inner intuition. And this is important as there's so many projects, there's too much to do, many, many things. You know, Jupiter also bestows and says, oh, I'm going to give everybody more than they can do. You know, it's good to put vetting standards in place. And so on small things, do I want to go to this event? Do I want to stay home? Do I want to go out to this thing? No. Do I want to stay home and read? No. Or vice versa. But again, just that quality, whatever we speak to in ourselves, we strengthen. And whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves, which is why we want to toss judgment, which is imprisoning, into the cauldron and ladle out discernment, you know, diagnosis, dia everywhere, gnosis, wisdom. Diagnosis is good, you know. So, yeah, prison masquerading as freedom, we go, sounds like a case for Bodhisattva Coyote. There we go. So certainly we want to toss corruption into the cauldron. And many people in their storytelling, you know, said the root of terrorism is corruption. If your sister must sleep with the judge to have her case heard and someone comes along and says, I don't know, spirits are joining us. What is it they say? Then, you know, again, they're offered the toxic mimic of the thing they really desire. And that's part of what we want to do is going, there's the toxic mimic, you know, the con. The con is enticing, but it's not the real thing. You know, and we go alienation and loneliness, you know, into the cauldron, ladling out participatory kinship. Now we've done the whole journey of starting off in embedded animism, everything's alive, and collaborating and working out deals, and then into the priesthoods, and then into the church and the state, and then into psychology. I forgot that part. Psychology says we don't need these things, but the sense of self is a little tight circle. It's at tremendous cost of feeling important and separated. And in a pretty great book, novel, The Overstory, all about trees and humans, he talks about, the author Richard Powers talks about, all human loneliness comes from something so big we can't even grasp it. It's our loneliness for the whole big thing, right? So it's also, you know, to take away and play with this, but we might throw into the cauldron, we'll do all this in a more formal or a more chaotic and wild way at the end, but the addiction to having an enemy into the cauldron, right? The addiction to having an enemy going, there we go. And that's why everything has its shadow. You know, everything is, you know, shamanism is very big these days. You know, shaman. We go, oh, that's good. But there is a shaman shadow, which is, you know, these people are out to get me. And we go, no. Which is why, see, the trickster within all of us, you know, will tease everyone, but not in a snarky way, with the intending of liberating. And in the Anonymous, when Inanna gets back from the underworld, which is where the Venus cycle is now, she becomes a trickster redeemer. And she decides that she's going to rescue culture that has been stolen by Enki, the god of wisdom, who has become a tyrant. And it's very sophisticated of the Sumerians 3,500 years ago to say anyone unchallenged will become tyrannical. So we want to throw attack into the cauldron, but ladle out challenge, which is woof, woof, want to play, right? And, you know, let us all aspire, if it resonates, to move our emotional default setting to woof, woof, want to play. And I'm always crafting. Craft is a wonderful word. It means power from dedication, but crafting these things. So I used to say all war is a failure of imagination. And then it's like, well, where's the second half, Caroline? If all war is a failure of imagination, then all peace is a triumph of imagination. There we go. We've gathered part of the power of this year, this time right now, you know, is to honor all the cruelty, all the sadness, all that's been lost in this past year, all that's been lost in the fires, all that's been lost in the floods, you know, Paradise, California, Pensacola, Florida, Puerto Rico, the 154 mass shootings in this country this year, 154, the children ripped from grieving parents at the border, the child not offered water who died, the baby who's hospitalized or who's imprisoned in the icebox. In Texas, they spend a lot of money making detention cages cold as a punishment. It's like, oh, it's like Philip Pullman's The Dark Matter trilogy, where the worst aspects of the state and the church, you know, attempt to generate energy by separating children from their daemons. You know, this monstrosity that feeds on gleeful cruelty, and we go, whoa. You know, all of that, you know, all the people, but all the black people killed by police, all of that, you know, we know there's a cold, dangerous wind that is blowing, and Bolsonaro in Brazil, possessed by the Trump Bannon demon, Bannon consulted with him, right? And right before his election, the murder of an extraordinary man, Mestre Moa de Catende, a capoeira master and advocate for Afro-Brazilian, who traveled the world, was a living treasure. And just some hothead, you know, Bolsonaro, Trump supporter, came into a bar and killed him, right? He was the first murder victim of an extreme right, you know, fan. And there are others. We know journalists who died or imprisoned. You know, America has now made the top five list of danger to journalists in the world. You know, and I like to say Kavanaugh bin Salman. You know, it's all the gag order. It's the Inquisition in many forms. You know, Italy, Hungary, Philippines, North Korea, Brazil, Saudi Arabia. These are places where leadership has been outsourced to tyranny. You know, and the journalists, the five reporters killed in Annapolis, Maryland. And also to feel kinship with that which has been lost in the natural world, the forests, the animals, the plants, at this tremendous rate of destruction, and that which is not yet lost, which is part of why we gather. You know, I've been working for a long time and hosting often, you know, Gwich'in people who live in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and they say, don't call it ANWR, don't use an acronym, because that loses intimacy with it. If you call it ANWR, they'll drill it. You know, it doesn't take that much to say the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Refuge, asylum, safety, protection. And just with scholars and people, scientists say, everything, the Gwich'in call the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge the place where all life begins. And almost everything on this earth does, you know, the yellow wagtail, this tiny songbird, journeys from India to the Arctic to Borneo. And in Borneo, they do their entire calendar on the arrival of this little songbird who has flown from India to the Arctic and then to Borneo. This amazing thing. And the scientist who was honoring the yellow wagtail says, we don't know what one more song dies, you know, one more indigenous people, all of that. So part of my love of these musicians is also that grief expressed through art becomes a powerful sacrament of kinship. We're all in this dream together, waterbound.
Shining bright, storm come up and the trees come down. I'm telling you, boys, I was waterbound, waterbound on a stranger's shore. River was rising to my door, carried my home to the fields below. I'm waterbound, nowhere to go. See the light. Black cat crawling on an old boxcar. A rusty door and a fallen star. Ain't got a dime in my nation's sack. I'm waterbound, no way but back. It's all gone and I won't be back. You don't believe me, count my tracks. River was long and the river is wide. I'll meet you boys on the other side. Say my name and don't forget. Water still ain't got me yet. Nothing but I'm bound to roam. Waterbound and I can't get home. Waterbound and I can't get
every time. Wow. Because so much has been lost, you know, and we look at what comes out of the cauldron of destruction. You know, we're gathering at this full moon this morning, right? And as we gathered, the sun was just setting and the moon rising behind everyone there. Whoa, the sun in Capricorn at 0 degrees Capricorn. This is King Arthur's birthday, you know, is the birth of the world redeemer in many forms. The divine is eager for humans to liberate the divine from past metaphors, you know, and all that. So the full moon, the moon in Cancer, her own sign, Big Mama's sign of fierce protection of life, opposite the sun in Capricorn, is a clear encouragement, assignment, and support for teasing, you know, sane, reverent common sense and protection of life into our governance, you know, into the structures. I saw Berta Cáceres receive the Environmental Award from the Goldman Award Committee that gives awards for incredible bravery. She was assassinated a year after that in Honduras. Many people who are protecting the environment, you know, have been targeted as well. We go, whew. But I loved her indigenous friends, the next Goldman Awards. They came on stage and they did this beautiful chant. They go, Berta did not die, she multiplied. Right, and Jamal Khashoggi did not die, he multiplied, right? And Moa in Brazil did not die, he multiplied. So we are, you know, composting the last vestiges of the Inquisition, but it's you know, we can see it, right? Inquisition outsourced Saturn, you know, to a priesthood, and we might want to throw mediating priesthoods into the cauldron and just have direct autonomy as a sacrament, direct connection. And then just something to work with that I keep working with too, which is the oppressor is actually seeking unwittingly the medicine of what he or she oppresses, right? You know, England really needed the metaphysic of India, conquered them, all of that. And there's many examples. Once you kind of have these working principles, then life comes to animate them. You know, a woman friend, I use this all the time, but I like it so much, at a festival, you know, came up and said, I just had this really strange experience with this undercover cop. You know, he's clearly an undercover cop. And he came up and he said, can you sell me some drugs that'll really mess me up? And she was like, she's like, that's a clue. And she said, no. And he said, I heard that people wearing headdresses and animal ears were selling drugs. And she's like, no. But she had a necklace that she'd made, which was bullet casings filled with bee pollen, which is a wonderful thing, right? Bullet casings, Mars, bee pollen, sacred to Venus, right? And so the undercover cop said, what's that? And she said, it's bee pollen. And he's like, she shook it into his hand, and he licked it and went away. And then he turned around and strode back towards her and said, I just want to apologize for my boorish behavior. He'd probably never used that word before and probably never apologized before. You know? And I go, see, he thought he wanted to bust you, but he really wanted the Venusian sacrament from the priestess of the bee pollen. So it's like, there we go. And a friend of mine was busted by the police and was very down. You know, and he said, but we had a jolly time talking. And I go, well, see, the only way they could receive your wisdom probably was arresting you, so just think of it as your mission. And he's like, that's the first time I've smiled in about a week. There we go. You know, it's part of, you know, throwing, you know, all this is voluntary, all, you know, aspiring to be an offering, not an imposition. May all of us, you know, aspire that our manner of relating being an offering, which is liberating as opposed to an imposition, which is constraining and serves colonial tyranny no matter what. And we're allowed to blow it. You know, in fairy tales, everybody blows it. Percival doesn't ask the right question in the Grail Castle that will save the world, right? But he forgets and he's thrown out. We all get thrown out of the Grail Castle. Or as Robert Bly says, we all get eaten by the witch for bad manners, you know, but if it goes on for years, we'll get pretty thin. But we're all allowed to blow it. And in being in so many groups where people were talking about my trauma, my trauma, my trauma, remember, we worship what we spend our time on, and we animate what we repetitively say. Language is one of the earliest technologies of intimate participation. So the more we expand our metaphors and our vocabulary, the more we have the freedom of many, many forms of intimate participation. I'm very fond of this one, which is, you know, to people I go, well, how about next time you're tempted to use the word trauma? You know, some of them couldn't even remember what their trauma was, but they knew it was bigger than everybody else's, going, ah, you know, how about throwing that into the cauldron and ladling out my dangerous, beautiful assignment, right? Which is, you know, it's a mission. Whatever hardship we've been through, may it be that it's an assignment for us to brew medicine for others coming along in similar circumstance. And I know this one. You know, we say redemption lies in brewing medicine for others. And it's a good part of us humans, right? It's also, I love, you know, a medicine man in Michael Gruber's esoteric thrillers. At first he's, you know, he wants to destroy, you know, those who are going to destroy his forest, his rainforest. And then the words arise, to love disharmony back into harmony creates a greater harmony than existed before. And we go, that is so the way to go, you know, in many ways of doing that. You know, and then, you know, just to put in quips, you know, we're on a journey, and, you know, the Sagittarius Jupiter realm, Mark Twain, a great, you know, we're all befoibled, but he said a real journey is where halfway through you wish you were home, right? So we're on a journey. We might want to throw regret as a useless, no longer useful, like, oh, you know, into the cauldron and ladle out remorse, or maybe a better word. But I love that in the Gurdjieffian level systems of, like, kind of depression and tyranny and suicide and panic, remorse is the highest of the constrained emotions right before clarity, right? You know, being subject to laws and then being agents of principles. And remorse is really, you know, where we do review and just look at all the times when we were offered a generous opportunity to be kind and we were churlish, right, in some way. So that seems a useful composting, you know, to throw regret in, ladle out remorse. But there is positive Jupiter out there, and we do want to praise, you know. I love, you know, Robert Bly's translation of Kabir says, you know, your depression is caused by your inability to praise. a man who is depressed is a thief and steals from God every moment, right? And it's a little finger-waggy, right? And it doesn't always fly well on Facebook. People go, no, I'm very depressed, and it's very mean, and it's like, okay, alrighty. You know, it's just one story. There you go. But, you know, to throw complaining into the cauldron and ladle out praising, not ignorant praising, but remember the word respect means to look at again. Keep looking. You know, Aretha, respect. Keep looking until you find something to praise. You know, because as disruptors of tyranny, and everybody's got these different examples, you know, a friend had, you know, dinner with a husband's, you know, conservative friend who just flew off the handle, you know, as a kind of Trump thing, and like, and you know, I've got a gun, and so, you know, I used to have something on my radio show called What I Wish I'd Said Last Week, right? And so, you know, but we want to revisit places and go, now, how could that have gone better? You know, dog training, puppy training is very useful, right? And I do love the dog whisperer, because if there's an undesirable behavior, you don't go no, right? Because that's resistance, right? And the dog's like, oh, play, ar. You go, hey, you just over here. You disrupt the fixation. Here comes Eris Discord. You disrupt that, and then over here is the liberating, desirable thing. And that's what we want to be with, you know, with politicians, too, going, hey, no, over here. There we go. We're going this way, you know. So we do want to also honor, you know, to praise, you know, Judge J. Emmett Sullivan, right, in the district who berated, you know, oh, God, what's his name? Wait a minute. Help. Flynn, thank you. Right, you're going, oh, it's a disgusting behavior. We got that. And also the Attorney General of Washington, D.C. I was so heartened, because what are we doing here? I ran into, you know, kind of Burning Man contingent and kind of hit people, and I was always wondering, you know, should I move to California where, you know, is whatever. I'm a folk hero there, but, you know, I stay here. But and then I ran into this person who said, I just moved here from Oakland because Washington, D.C. is the hippest place in America. I'm like, really? That's fabulous. God, that's so much more convenient for us. You know, just, yes, come visit, come stay, come do good things. And because he said, because the Attorney General of Washington, D.C. is the most enlightened restorative justice attorney general in the country. I'm like, oh, righty, if we stay here long enough, it's going to get hip. That's good. I love the phrase, you know, we're just dusting off everything. The phrase, tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love each other. Right? And we say tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love the earth. Right? So, you know, this species loneliness, you know, an animistic kinship, and loneliness, you know, is the antidote is the wisdom of kinship. And in a fairy tale, right, when there are lost children, right, when there's something so terrible that humans have done, you know, the hero or heroine goes to the animals, the birds, the crows, the slime mold, you know, all of our kin, all these participants, you know, that have such collective intelligence, and says, oh, slime mold, oh, crows, oh, wolves, can you help us find the children to restore them back to their parents? That's what we do in a fairy tale. And many of you know that slime mold, right, is individuals that come together as a community, you know, in a time of crisis, because the community is smarter and knows how to do it. And slime mold are ingenious at making their way through mazes. And again, many of you know this. It's a great story that Paul Stamets tells. But scientists were, I think it's rye flakes, that slime mold were just wild about rye flakes. And so they would make a maze and then put, you know, rye flakes, and the slime mold would wend their way there, you know, and then they would shut down the inefficient pathways. And it was Japanese engineers redesigning the Tokyo subway system who were like, oh. And so they made a maze, and they put rye flakes on every proposed subway stop, right? And so the slime mold made their way there, shut down the inefficient pathways, and the engineers used that to design the Tokyo subway system, right? So it's like, are you smart enough to cooperate with a slime mold, right? So, and, you know, perhaps one of my favorite Abe Lincoln quotes, who said many great things, but he said, I care not for any man's religion whose dog and cat are not the better for it. Go, Abe. And then always I love bringing in Lauren Isley. Again, we bring in the ancestors, and I have a special kind of muti that was grown for me in South Africa. It's called umpepu. And they said, if you're with good-hearted people who need ancestral support, you can use this. So it's molecular intimacy, it opens the channels, right, to the mystery of ancestral support of anybody throughout time who's ever been dedicated to anything that we're dedicated to, because it's all collaborative. It's all collaborative. Well, Liam Pape was very excited. So Lauren Isley, you know, a great scientist with a poetic soul. He says, one does not meet oneself until one catches the reflection from an eye other than human, right? The gaze, you know, and it's like food. Certainly, I lived with a coyote for 19 years, and it's like, ooh, the gaze. And as she was dying, we just held each other's gaze for so long. It was like, and, you know, anybody who's been, you know, in the wild parks of South Africa, you know, where you're in a car, right? But the hyenas come up and go, you know, and the guide said, and the giraffes are very confiding because they're like, ooh, you know, and each gaze is a different food. It's like, oh, we need all of this, right? So Lauren Isley says, though men in the mass forget the origins of their needs, they still bring wolfhounds into city apartments where dog and man both sit brooding in wistful discomfort, right? And then he's talking about the magic that gleams an instant between Argos and Odysseus. Argos is Odysseus' dog. It's the only being who recognizes him. Is both the recognition of diversity and the need for affection across the illusion of form. It is nature's cry to homeless, far-wandering, insatiable man. Do not forget your brethren, your sistren, or the green wood from which you sprang. To do so is to invite disaster. And the last favorite quote from Lauren Isley, he says, we are rag dolls made out of many ages and skins, changelings who have slept in wood nests or hissed in the uncouth guise of waddling amphibians. We have played such roles for infinitely longer ages than we have been men. Our identity is a dream. We are process, not reality, for reality is an illusion of the daylight, the light of our particular day. Wexford Carroll. Thank you. hearts through beauty. Ah, wonderful. So we want to go even to the darkest midnight in a moment, the darkest midnight of the year, into this deep place, again, you know, this cauldron of rebirth. And we go, destruction is a terrible thing and a great opportunity. As we see so much being destroyed, the different systems of government, and we have quirky allies, like people going, yay, FBI, you know, I mean, all kinds of like, what? Whatever we speak to one another, going, no, not the COINTELPRO, bad, that part, the good part, there we go. And also our capacity to be intimate with the world by being able to read it symbolically. You know, as we began, Neptune was overhead representing the intelligence of dreams, vision, imagination that we all were and have in us, in our endogenous selves, an intimacy with the world by being able to read it symbolically, that everything's speaking to us, everything is telling us its story all the time by its shape, its color, its song, its rhythm. And if we humans just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, we'd be back in the choreography of creation again, back dancing and cooperating. Because what's going down, again, is dominance and cruelty and, you know, I've got mine. What wants to come up is, you know, a renaissance of ingenuity, of humans humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius. And there are many, many good-hearted people working on this. And it's such an elegant thing when we have our story craft, you know, and to be story crafters, to magnetize, you know, people away from the tyrannical con, going, come on, look how beautiful this is. Again, remember, we all have our magic mirror, right, which is the secular critic part of us holds up a mirror and goes, it really sucks in detail, this is outrageous, which is important. And then the trickster within us, with a wave of the hand or paw, you know, turns the mirror into a window, a vision. Look how beautiful it could be. Come on this way. And then with another wave of paw, hand, turns it into a door. Let's go. Right. And that's where we want to go. And a friend, a good etymologist, reminded me that the word symbolic, sim means together and bol is to throw. So he said, either we have a symbolic intimacy with the world or the world is diabolic, right? Thrown apart. We go, right. I love Terry Pratchett, great animist, great late animist, who says, magic is easy. You just find the fulcrum point and push gently. There we go. He said many great things, a wonderful animist, but he said, you know, here we are in this little circle of firelight we call the physical world, surrounded by vast, pulsing mystery, you know, the invisible, the ancestors, the dead, the energetic force fields. You know, and it was years ago that I, you know, still clipped an article from the New York Times that said, scientists discover that beneath and around every river is an invisible river, teeming with organisms and whatnot, but invisible, about 500 feet down, about a half mile out, and the health of the visible river depends on the health of the invisible river. We go, well, this is metaphysics 101. Around everything, around us as a gathering, there's an invisible field, around our hand, our arm, our thing, around the tree, around the river, is an invisible field, right? And because of our, you know, outsourcing to those who are least literate in life, you know, if it's invisible, we go, no. And it's these times of mystery, right? The winter solstice is a time of mystery. I am not jaded at all. I love the solstice. I love these holy days. I love Christmas. Christmas is the solstice, right? Because if we noticed where the sun was rising, you know, yesterday and today and through the 25th, you know, it's at its southernmost point, right? But it stays there for 4 days before it begins to return back, hence Christmas, right? And that's Christmas, or the 25th, is the return when the sun begins to move north again, and we can see it. Each sunrise and sunset is a little bit further north until the summer solstice, and we go, right. So the opportunity from collapse, and I was, I've been talking to some people, hosting some people on radio who direct enormous amounts of wealth. Good wealth, great ally Joel Solomon, and he says, you know, we have a 20-year plan and a 500-year vision. I'm like, that's heartening. And so many so many children of the polluters are kind of laundering that money. You know, the great logging money have given birth to these environmentalists who are cleansing the fortunes. I love the quip, no fortune without a felony. Right, and we go, all right, well, let's transform the felony into collective good to begin to redress the harm that was done in the making of that money. But I know a friend of mine, Dune Lankert, Athabaskan in Alaska, wonderful, great activist, and who's doing great things. I think he's 3/4 of the way there. They raised some tens of millions of dollars to buy the Bering coal fields from the Korean industrial coal company. And Storycraft, he says to the Korean industrialists, you know, think of your legacy. You know, think of the goodwill that you would get to sell this to native people to keep it in trust in perpetuity, that the coal never leave the ground. You know, he's like, but my stockholders. And it's like, but your legacy. You're looking at death. What will your children? You know, and it's like, okay. So they're almost there. They've secured several whole watersheds. They were also trying this in Alaska because the Athabaskans doing the last, you know, kind of, or one of the diminishing wild salmon, right? Farm salmon, no, wild salmon. But they were starting a program to pay fishermen to not fish, right? And I was saying to Joel Solomon, going, well, with all this wealth, you know, what would be ingenious to completely disrupt the false polarity of environmental concerns and people's working class jobs? You know, if we paid loggers and drillers and miners and fishers here, we will pay you twice what the polluters are paying for you to stay home this winter and read about the ocean, you know, and read about the forests, and become stewards of this new culture, that you will then become protectors of what you have inadvertently been despoiling. No shame, no blame. And we go, right, so I think just, it's a good vision, right? And see, Neptune says, always start with the vision, not what you think is practical. Because when people start with realism, they go to war. But when we start with a shared vision, then avenues trickster open up, avenues of possibility that weren't apparent before, going, isn't that a great vision? You know, yeah, isn't that a great vision? Yeah, you know, just always going back there, going right. I think it's a great vision. You know, again, because it immediately, right, disrupts that polarity of like, you don't care about our jobs, and it's like, we do. You know, the complete regearing. It's also other plans that are possible once we put again money and leadership into appropriate positions. Another ally who can make alcohol and fuel out of almost all waste. And he said, if we bought up the leaking oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, and because they're leaking and abandoned, you know, and then you harvest seaweed, the seaweed pulls the toxic pollutants out of the Gulf, and you turn it in those oil rigs into fuel. And he said, we could fuel 1/4 of the nation on that, right? And employ the people who used to be oil rig workers. And it's like, oh, it's really, you know. So again, many of these things, and this is the kind of time for this vision to go, wouldn't that be great? It's also part of the language dynamic. You know, people go, how long will we have war? And I go, as long as we keep using war as a metaphor. And one of my fun things is I like throwing the word vulnerable into the cauldron because it's from the battlefield. It means woundable. And so many people are like, love makes you vulnerable. I'm like, oh, what a bad idea that is. Obsession makes you vulnerable. Love is really a good thing, you know. And when I was talking to somebody who was saying, I found the vulnerable parts of my friend, and I showed him the vulnerable parts, and I go, yeah. And he's like, no, it means, you know, approachable. And I go, no, my handy etymological dictionary. And he's like, oh. So he did get kind of grumpy about it. He said, it's like, I really like my trauma and my vulnerability. And it's like, oh, you just try letting it go. And he's like, well, what would you suggest as a replacement word? And I go, it's not the equivalent, but isn't it more fun to throw a vulnerable into the cauldron and ladle out available? You know, it's just like kind of, yeah, I found the available parts of my friend and I revealed the available, you know, woof, woof, want to play parts. So it's also, you know, we get so many email, right? So and I'm on every environmental sucker list. I'm going, well, I do what I can, little magic amounts, but we have our criterion. So anything that is fear-based, I kind of delete it, going, you need more language crafting. You know, we're going to die. This is horrible. I'm going to lose. You know, this is, you know, it's like, no, that's not, you're appealing to the amygdala. That's not great. But our language, our Saturn, this is the Saturnalia, our dedication that our language, our story, and our metaphor be in accord, you know, with our dedicated hearts. And may our hearts, you know, remember that the Aramaic translation of the Beatitudes by Neil Douglas Clutt, Aramaic, the vernacular Jesus would have spoken, what comes to us as blessed are the meek in Aramaic is more like, blessed are those who soften emotional rigidity within their hearts, for they shall have all the power of nature. It's like, oh. Even now, you know, any little kerfuffles or any person in our personal lives that we mind, like, man, you know, it's like, throw it all into the cauldron, there we go, it's an energy leak, there we go. You know, and it's also the difference between, say, prediction and prophecy. I mean, so many people go, what's going to happen? You know, and when will Trump leave? You know, and we go, well, it's not what's going to happen, it's what are we going to make happen? You know, and what's woof-woofing before us going, woof-woof, want to play? So for myself, I like imagining the divine, you know, because I'm so coyote-wolf-oriented, wolfoti, as like a large coyote wolf bowing down in front of each one of us, dangerous in a good way, going, woof, woof, want to play? We go, yeah, we do. You know, because dangerous in a good way is a fun category. Just on a local level, you know, in adorable little Cabin John where I live, there's a bad plan to widen the beltway and the bridge, and we go, oh no, widening the beltway into the cauldron, you know, because it's like, well, then what are you going to do about the traffic? We're going to keep widening it until there's nothing left, you know? How about long-term or even short-term vision, high-speed rail? Come on, you know, let's have ingenious solutions, you know? Well, you know, it's tricky, right? Because we get to hold ourselves to this. It's like, I don't want to be to get grumpy about somebody being grumpy, right? Or to be kind of finger-waggy about people being finger-waggy, or, you know, or the word police or anything. But we do have predominant words. So many people use the word impact. And I go, really, you want a short, violent encounter? How about a long, curvy influence, right? You know, just you know, but I'm saying it to you so that you can take over this task, because people are tired of me saying that. So let's go to the darkest night, in a deep, darkest midnight, in a deep place, because then we will go into the cauldron and throw things out. Beautiful. Just feel the softness of everything we love approaching us in that quiet, going, hello, hello. So now the chant that we'll play with that I first heard from Starhawk in 1981, right? It's just the longest night, longest nights, really. The wheel is turning, what will we give to the night? So I've got some suggestions that have been sprinkled through, but it's where each person, you get to shout out what you'd like to be gone with the cauldron, and then we're going to ladle things out as well. with magic sound effects. All right, so we just go, the longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Racism.
And then we say, racism is gone with the night. Woohoo. And then we ladle out to equality. All right, we'll just throw things in this time, right? Okay, but that's really good. The longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Fear
is gone with the night. The longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Suffering.
Oops, oh wait, no, suffering is quite stubborn. Okay. Whoa, there it is, okay. Suffering is gone with the night. Okay, the longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Greed
is gone with the night. Wow, boy, greed was very hungry right there. Okay. The longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night? Judgment. Judgment is gone with the night. Woo! The longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Ignorance.
Ignorance is gone with the night. Whoa. This is adorable. ignorance was just charmed out of existence, right? The longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Separation.
Golfing, did you say? No.
Cruelty,
yes, no. Cruelty is gone with the night. Whoa, right. Okay, the longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Insomnia.
Insomnia is gone with the night. The longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Hypocrisy.
See, and all these things are happy to dance off, thanks to our magical. They're like, oh, we're liberated. We're liberated into what we wanted to be. We never wanted to be hypocrisy. All right. The longest nights, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night?
Self-interest.
Sure. Self-interest as leadership is gone with the night. The longest night, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night? Oh, sure. Okay. Government shutdown is gone with the night. All right. Let's see. And then let's have just everybody shout out all together what we want gone. You know, the longest night, the wheel is turning. What will we give to the night? Oh, shame and sarcasm.
More lies.
Excellent. All right. All that is gone with the night. One more.
All is gone with the night.
What? One? It's all. Whoa! Excellent. Well done. Right, and we have lots of fun things, you know, imprisoning, liberating comes out, all that, grumpy about people being grumpy, all that, and a list of fantastic things. But we did pretty good. That was pretty good. So, in preparing for our final. Oh, no, don't do that. Our final trickster. Launching Renaissance, just a little bit here. There's a Iquique Eskimo poem from Baffin Island, collected by Knud Rasmussen. I arise from rest with movement swift as the beat of a raven's wings. I arise to meet the day. My face is turned from the dark of night to gaze at the dawn of day. And it reminded me of something I always have on my wall, one of my favorite poems or writings, really, by William Kittredge, and it's about a raven rattle. There's a picture of it, but he paints the picture with words. He says, sometime in the early 1880s, a medical doctor named Israel Wood Powell, superintendent for Indian affairs for coastal Indians in British Columbia, collected a raven rattle from the Tsimshian Indians. he sent the rattle to the American Museum of Natural History in New York, where it remains. It's a percussive instrument used in elaborate ceremonial dances, a simple rattle like the ones we all shook in childhood, except that this one is carved into the form of a mythological raven caught in the act of stealing the sun back from captivity, carrying the little red ball of the sun in his mouth, preparing to spit it home into the heavens again. That's a striking idea, but not half so remarkable as the beings we see riding on the raven, a human figure reclining back in a posture of sexual openness, and a frog crouching over as if preparing to mount, and their tongues... Whoops. Excuse me. The wolves are howling. they love this part. And their tongues, or tongue, red and slender and arcing, it's a single tongue, and a most remarkable thing as it reaches from human to frog and frog to human. It's all the same in this vision, in which we share tongues with the animals in some perfect sexuality, while our trickster raven redeploys the sun, as in Raven Brought the Light. The unknown person who made that rattle is a glory to our species. See, that raven rattle says, this is how we are. Inextricably one with everything, however tricked, riding, in fact, on the back of trickiness itself. It's really good. So our rousing finale, just a little bit before, well, here we are. Let's put on our mythic garb in our mind's eye, our syncretized trickster from everything that we love, you know, coyote, raven, seeds, you know, Groucho Marx, you know, just all of those things, you know, and... because we want to be artists of atmosphere, to create the atmosphere that is conducive to the desirable. It's part of our backstage dynamic, and cooperators are standing by, eager to cooperate, eager to help. You know, and part of that is language and words, and you know, I have a word screensaver, you know, and every now and then the word ebullient, and I go, ebullient, right? You know, it's cheerful and full of energy. And then there's a Native American word, popowi. Papawi. It's the force that causes mushrooms to push up and appear, right? You know, just together it's so fun. Papawi. 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 Here we go. Right, may papawi, may mushroom energy replace all weapons, right? You know, and then there's an exaltation of larks, which is a heart-lifting, you know, and the word diaphanous, permitting the free passage of light, diaphanous, right? You know, and then all the ancestors are hovering around, and everyone we've ever had as a mentor, you know, behind us, animal, plant, human, and says, we've given you the keys, now put them in the lock and use them, right? So we make this dedication in our hearts that whatever we've been given, like, oh, you know, we're not going to just use knowledge as a kind of credential. We're going to go put the key in the lock and turn it, you know, pragmatic mysticism. What does everything we know, what would it be like if we applied that? And then the dance of Mars and Venus in their fresh cycles, you know, we say Venus magnetizes, Mars animates, and together they spiral blessing into the world. Go on. So in creative cahoots with what we love, we want to spiral forth the irresistibly eloquent, all-inclusive, magnetizing, unifying story, you know, going, whew. And with Trickster, we go, whatever is truly best for everyone, come on in, known or unknown. We say 2019 is staged, it's eager, it's inviting, it's woofing before us, you know, as a massive, collective, global awakening of humans willing to humbly cooperate with nature's guiding genius. And we go, yes, let's do that. You know, and then I love in Terry Pratchett's last book, The Young Girl Witch, she's so wonderful, and her mentor, Granny Weatherwax, has died, and she doesn't feel up to accepting, you know, she's daunted by destiny, right? And this is, you know, can be for all of us. And she's hesitant to proclaim herself, you know, the witch of the land that loves her. But there comes a moment of great danger where she finally says to the land and the trees and the plants and the animals that she loves, she goes, okay, I am your witch, right? And everybody, and all the land says, thank goodness you finally said that, right? So I like thinking of all men as wizards, you know, and all women as witchy wizards in a way, you know. And so in our hearts, you know, we might say inwardly or out loud, you know, to everything we love, to the neighborhood we live in, okay, you know, ready or not, you know, I am your witch. So I am your witch. I am your wizard. There we go. That's really good. And our neighborhoods are very happy about that. And we go, we are here on the Beauty is Stronger Than Tyranny tour. It is also the wonderful Eritrean word, Aizan, which means it's a blessing for those setting off on a worthy, dangerous journey of companionship and backup from the spirits. You know, Aizan, Aizan, Aizan. And now our rousing finale, in which you can feel and invite all of this goodness into you, our bodies. My wonderful neighbors, Robin and Melanie Pat Corner, and to our beautiful musicians, Keith Carr and Tina Eck, that's Lilt. And I'm Caroline Casey, thanking you for doing this beautiful work. And one last, thank you. Thank you, team. Okay. Go forth and be woofy. Oh.